move to the fourth case this morning, United States v. Huddleston.
Good morning. May it please the court. The warrantless entry by police officers into Tarana White's home where defendant Timothy Huddleston was living cannot be justified either by exigent circumstances or by third-party consent. Where there's a risk of danger, the danger has to be ongoing or imminent, or at least the officers have to reasonably believe that the danger is imminent or ongoing. Here, the defendant, Timothy Huddleston, was asleep in a locked house. He had made a threat on the telephone 2 hours earlier. The officers testified that they believed Timothy Huddleston was waiting for his girlfriend to come home, but they knew she wasn't coming home. And although it is unreasonable for officers to delay going in if such delay would gravely endanger them or others, there was no showing that this was the case here.
How long was he going to sleep?
Well, that's certainly unclear, but there had been nothing happening for at least 2 hours.
How did they know she wasn't going to come back? Did they know that from the mother?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
They knew that neither the girlfriend was there nor the little boy.
What if he woke up in the next minute after they saw him?
Well, I believe it was either the magistrate or the district court said that or assumed that he would wake up and start shooting, but there's no evidence in the record. There's nothing in the record to indicate that that's what would happen. In fact, it's far more likely that someone who's sleeping in a locked house who actually has a gun sees police officers outside, it's far more likely that that person would try to hide the gun rather than blast it out with police officers who happen to be standing outside, because he had no knowledge that Mrs. White had gone into the house.
Now, it's after you already made the threat to put the mother in a body bag?
The girlfriend in a body bag that was on the phone several hours earlier, and he had made no efforts to contact her after that.
Except he showed up with a gun.
Well, he was in his own house with a gun, but she wasn't there, and she wasn't going there.
Yes, the gun conceded is his house, but that's...
When the officers got the call that there's a man... When the officers get a call that there's a man with a gun, that does require fast action. But once they determined that he was asleep and they could hear him snoring from the outside... Then they had a few more moments to get the facts right, and they got a lot of facts wrong. In fact, the defendant had permission to be there. He had the keys. He wasn't trespassing. He was living there. He didn't make threats in person. He didn't continue to call and threaten after the girlfriend left the house. She wasn't in the house. The mother was not sent by the daughter, and the house was not unlocked when the mother, Dorothy White, got there. Those are all facts that the officers got wrong. And granted, a man with a gun is something that officers have to take very seriously. But once they see that he's snoring, they do have a couple of minutes to determine what the facts truly are. They didn't do so in this case, and by not doing so, that was unreasonable. In addition, Dorothy White told them, he's not going anywhere, I just want him out. There are other ways of getting an unwanted person out of the house rather than have police officers barge in through the door. Dorothy White didn't consider it an emergency. After seeing Timothy Huddleston with the gun, she first called her daughter. She didn't immediately call the police. And she told her daughter to call the police, and her daughter said no. And it was only after that she called the police. The government also attempts to justify the search based on third-party consent. But Dorothy White was the landlady, and she had no authority to consent, and she told the officers on the scene that she was renting the house to her daughter. The fact that she had the keys doesn't change this. It's often the case that a landlord will have the keys. The government cites Liddell, where a mother and daughter wanted a defendant out, but in that case, the circumstances were very different. In that case, the call came in that there was an attack going on in the apartment, and the mother, who gave consent, was the main tenant. Here, there was no indication at all that Dorothy White had access to the interior of the house, except to the extent that she was a landlady. She went there to lock the door. And she wasn't sent by Tarana White, the daughter, to check out what was going on in the house.
She went because she overheard the conversation?
Yes, correct. And she went to lock the door. That was her testimony, that she talked about it with her daughter, and she went over there to lock the door, the outer door to which the defendant did not have the key. Also, going back to exigent circumstances for a minute, this is not a situation where a man with a gun is cornered into a house and now is going to either shoot it out with police officers or give up. This is a man who's asleep, who has no idea that anyone knows he's holding a gun in his hand in his own home in a locked house. Now, regarding the sufficiency of the evidence, the only evidence of intent to distribute was testimony regarding quantities, that 5 grams, which granted is a small quantity, there was testimony that 5-gram quantities are generally means that someone is distributing. This is not for personal use. But the evidence that was given is not sufficient for a jury to find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant possessed that small quantity of drugs with intent to distribute it. Regarding the possession of the gun in furtherance of possession with intent to distribute, the evidence is even more attenuated. Here we have the presence of a gun in close proximity to a small quantity of drugs, but there was no indication that the defendant was selling drugs at that location. In fact, there was every indication that he was not. And there's no theory as to how the gun furthered the drug possession in his own locked home. This was not a stash he was protecting, no selling going on. The only thing we have here is vague testimony of guns in drug houses, and that's insufficient for proof beyond a reasonable doubt. For these reasons, I'm asking this court to reverse the district court's ruling on the motion to quash arrest and suppress evidence and to vacate the conviction.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Marshall, you're a frequent flyer here today, aren't you?
I want to thank the court for scheduling it like this. It's tremendously convenient to do several arguments in a day. So if you don't mind, I appreciate it. Ms. Palacios and I are former colleagues from the office downstairs, and I respect the work she's done in this case and is presented in a light most favorable to her client. But I would like to correct one feature. Judge Dowd, to answer your question, I do not recall the record giving any indication that the police knew that the daughter would not come back. They knew that the daughter was not there. The daughter was at the mother's home with their child. I don't think there's any indication in the record that some circumstance, as so frequently happens in these domestic situations, the daughter wouldn't somehow return. So,
but it's also true that the mother went without the daughter's. The daughter didn't tell her to go. She went on her own because she'd heard the...
The daughter told her to go in and check the place out. Is that not correct? I apologize for not knowing.
I'm just trying to put the two and two together here because I thought I just heard that the mother went on her own, but maybe I didn't hear that.
Well, of course, I don't have the transcript here and couldn't find it immediately myself, but I thought that she overheard the telephone conversation and the daughter was afraid to go home. I see that our brief doesn't say one way or the other. So I do not know. There's not a lot of testimony. I mean,
Yeah, we can read the what's in there in any event.
Right. But the other feature of this is the snoring. And Ms. Blasius says, well, the police had a couple of minutes because he was snoring. Of course, they took a couple of minutes to deliberate and decide how best they should enter the house and decided that they would do it in a strategic line, lining up outside the door and then busting in and making sure that none of them got shot by the gun. But I hope by the court's questions is understanding that that his sleeping was a unpredictably temporary condition that no one could predict when he might awaken. And of course, you know, bear in mind that this wasn't a man that was snuggled up in bed with his teddy bear in his arms. He was sitting up with a hat, gloves, and a jacket, and the gun in his hand. So there was, I think, every reason to believe that the circumstances warranted immediate action. And I mean, imagine, step back for a minute and imagine what would have happened with Dorothy White if the police had said, oh, don't worry about it, he's asleep, we'll take a couple of hours and contact the judge and get a search warrant. I mean, this is a woman who had just heard the defendant threaten to put her daughter in a body bag, and she goes over to the house, and there he's sitting with what appears to be a gun in his hand. And I think this was good police work, and they acted appropriately, and this is what all citizens would hope the police would do under these circumstances, and I hope the court would recognize that and approve.
They already knew that he had been charged with aggravated discharge of a firearm as well, right?
Right. They knew he had a violent past history, and they knew that this was one of those volatile domestic situations that often causes so many problems. Regarding the quantity of drugs and evidence of distribution, I think also that our brief underscores the fact that he had a number of 20s in his wallet, and of course he had quantities in his jacket pocket that could be distributed, as the expert said, for $20 apiece. So there's pretty clear indication that the drugs that he was holding were for distribution, beyond merely the expert's testimony that 5.2 or 4 grams was a distribution quantity. In terms of the gun being held in furtherance of the drug trafficking offense, I did not find any case from this court where the guns and the drug, or the handgun and the drugs, were on the person at the same time, and that was not sufficient evidence to demonstrate that the gun was held for purposes of the drug trafficking. I mean, most of the cases where there's some question or insufficient of the evidence is, you know, the gun is found in another part of the house or another room. But I cannot imagine a rule of law whereby a drug dealer is found with drugs and holding a loaded revolver unlawfully in his hand could be construed as insufficient evidence of holding that gun in furtherance of the drug offense. Thank you again. No further questions.
Thank you.
I just would like to make a couple of points regarding my earlier comment that the police knew the daughter would not come back. She was at her mother's house, and that's what they knew. And they knew that from Dorothy White, that Dorothy White had discussed the situation with her daughter, and after the discussion, Dorothy White went to lock up. And so the inference is that the daughter was staying at home. There was also testimony that whenever they had a disagreement, she would go, I'm sorry, that the daughter was staying at her parents' home. There was testimony that whenever there was a disagreement, the daughter would go and stay at her parents' home. Now, regarding the fact that Dorothy White had just heard this threat, she had heard the threat several hours earlier. She didn't rush over to lock the house, not even to lock the house, much less to call the police, at the time that the threat was made. She waited for her daughter to come home. Her daughter came home. They discussed it. Several hours went by. Dorothy White then went to lock Timothy Huddleston out. As far as the sufficiency of the evidence, there's no indication that he was doing any kind of dealing or had a stash or that anyone was coming to the house to buy. He was running in and out of the house, anything like that. And based on that, I'm basing my argument that the nexus is insufficient for the gun to be held in furtherance of the possession with intent to distribute. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just curious about you. Did you represent him in the trial court?
No, I did not.
Because you're from Ludington, Michigan?
Though. Yes.
It's kind of unusual that a lawyer from Ludington is here in the Seventh Circuit representing him.
Well, I practiced before the Seventh Circuit when I was in AUSA, and I was there for almost 18 years.
And you were appointed by this court, right?
Yes.
Yes, and I love Ludington, Michigan, which I've been to many
great
times.
Great place.
I used to take the Chesapeake and Ohio Auto Ferry from Milwaukee to Ludington.
Thank you very much, counsel, for the excellent representation of your client. Okay.
But it takes about 12 hours, doesn't it?
No, that took about 5.5 from Milwaukee to Ludington. It was a lot easier than driving around Chicago or through the UP. They have some great liquor stores in Ludington, if you ever go.
Okay. Case number 5.